From Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop, where we do strive to bring you all the news the government does not want you to know. Today, I have the unhappy task of providing real smoking gun evidence of the most lawless administration in American history. I don't say this lightly, and I don't say this as a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, but as an American who loves my country and who loves the Constitution of the United States. I used to work for the House of Representatives as an attorney. I don't often tout my credentials on this show, but I think you should know that I was a graduate at the top of my class, magna cum laude, from Harvard College and from Yale Law School. I've been studying the Constitution and the law for more than 15 years, and I did work for the House, for a high-ranking member on the House Judiciary Committee and the Homeland Security Committee. I say this to let you know that I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't accept wild conspiracy theories. I don't need to. The evidence is overwhelming, and by some highly respected people, people who are conservative Republicans, but yet love our country more than they love the President of the United States. The testimony this week of James Comey, the former Attorney General of the United States, he was the acting Attorney General when John Ashcroft was sick in bed in the hospital with emergency gallbladder surgery, is stunning for what it tells us. I do believe now that the President of the United States has installed a program very similar to that in East Germany or the Soviet Union under communism, whereby every American's activities are being spied on, and they're keeping little files about you and about me. I'll tell you how I come to that conclusion at the end of the broadcast. Before then, let me set the stage, and let's talk about how we know this very activity has occurred. Of course, it all comes out of the Attorney General scandal for firing a number of U.S. attorneys. They are the federal prosecutors, the people that go before juries and try to convict people of federal laws. Now, this is not supposed to be a political process. These are independent attorneys. As James Comey testified, the reason it can't be political is because he has to go to juries across the country, and they have to believe that the members of the Justice Department are representing the law and representing justice rather than some political goal. Otherwise, juries aren't going to convict. Now, we know that a number of prosecutors were fired because they dared to try to stop bribery in the House of Representatives. They dared to try to stop Duke Cunningham, a congressman from San Diego, California, from committing bribery, people like Carol Lamb, the prosecutor in San Diego. And some believe she was fired for it. But as James Comey testifies, this should not be a political decision. Let me play for you his testimony, if I can, before the House Judiciary Committee, before we get to the real topic of today, which is, of course, the amazing scandal at Attorney General Ashcroft's bedside that reminds me more of Don Corleone than it does of anything that should happen in the United States of America. Let me play for you, first of all, though, just some testimony from James Comey about why it is important that prosecutors uphold the law rather than politics.
That is the most, in my view, the most serious thing that I've heard come up in this entire controversy. If that was going on, that strikes at the core of what the Department of Justice is. You just cannot do that. You can't hire assistant U.S. attorneys based on political affiliation, again, because it deprives the department of its lifeblood, which is the ability to stand up and have juries of all stripes believe what you say, and have sheriffs and judges and jailers and the people we deal with trust the Department of Justice.
Okay, so that's the heart of the prosecutor scandal. And just so you understand what kind of up-and-up man James Comey is, this is an email that he wrote to Bud Cummings. Bud Cummings was a U.S. attorney in Arkansas before he was fired. They cited performance reasons, but they couldn't name what the performance reasons are, and they couldn't, they being the Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez, or the President of the United States, or the Deputy Attorney General, or anyone under him could say why he was fired. He asked James Comey, who's the hero of today, who we're going to show a lot of his testimony, in an email, what to do. And I want to play Linda Sanchez reading this email for you.
You are a good man and have handled this maelstrom with great dignity. Watching it causes me great pain for the USAs, whom I respect, and the department, which I love. Regardless, I will not sit by and watch good people smeared. What's that quotation about? All that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to remain silent, end quote. Did you, in fact, tell Mr. Cummins that?
I did.
Thank you, Mr. Cummins. I have no further questions.
Okay, you got
Mr.
that? All that is necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to be silent. James Comey was silent about what happened for many years. It's only because of the wonderful work of Chuck Schumer, Senator of New York, the fact that we have a Democratic Congress that believes in the rule of law, that believes in checks and balances, that believes in our Constitution, that believes that the government of the United States, the President of the United States, is not infallible, is not the Pope, but actually should be checked on by the American people. Now, this is a fundamental difference between Democrats and Republicans, as you know. Republicans believe that the President of the United States should never be looked into, that he should never be investigated, that what he does should never be questioned. The Democrats, when they were elected, changed this view. And they believe that, in fact, the President of the United States should be examined, should be investigated. And when we come back, I'm going to play for you the testimony of James Comey, because his testimony, and it's long, it's about 20 minutes long, tells an amazing story of trying to force the Attorney General, then the Attorney General of the United States, Alberto Gonzalez, to break the law. Now, Attorney General Gonzalez was a man who I, working on the House Judiciary Committee, was very upset with, as a man, in my mind, who was all too ready to violate constitutional prohibitions against torture, constitutional prohibitions against spying on the American people. But apparently the president wanted to go even farther than Attorney General Gonzalez in violating Americans' constitutional rights. And when we come back, I'm going to play for you the stunning testimony of James Comey. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. One that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice.
If you're concerned that we've become a nation whose national policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a lie embedded in BS, then don't miss Escape from Orwellianation, a talk show in which concerned regular citizens like you and me, not self-serving media spinmeisters, wade through the barrage of newspeak and doublethink that pollutes public discourse today. Big Brother, big business, big media, and the big national parties who collude to keep we the people afraid and in the dark would prefer that you not watch. Show them who's in charge. Tune in to Escape from Orwellianation right here on Channel 10.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. As a formal trial lawyer, I know that you can't just say a bunch of things without presenting the evidence. I also know that sometimes you need to stand out of the way and let the evidence speak its mind. I'm not here to convince you that the president is lawless. I want you to see what was testified to just this week before the Senate Judiciary Committee by an upstanding man, James Comey, conservative Republican, worked under John Ashcroft, who tells a story about our current Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez, and how he tried to strong-arm John Ashcroft while he was sick in a hospital bed to get him to sign on to a program to, it seems to be, spy on every American in the United States against the Constitution. It sounds, again, like a bad movie, but I'm going to get out of the way and I'm going to show you my evidence. And then at the end of the program, it is a live program. There'll be plenty of time if you disagree with my take on this, or if you agree, I want to hear from you. I want to hear what you think. This clip is hard to find, folks. It was shown on C-SPAN. But if you go to C-SPAN's website, you can't find it under an ordinary search. Luckily, American citizens who understand the value of independent media have saved it. I want to praise PoliticsTV.com for capturing this on C-SPAN, even though it's very hard to find on C-SPAN's website, and saving it for us on Google Network, the same network that, in fact, shows my show. My video is at RadioInsideScoop.com. Let's go now to the testimony of James Comey.
It was Wednesday, March the 10th, 2004.
And how do you remember that date so well?
This was a very memorable period in my life, probably the most difficult time in my entire professional life, and that night was probably the most difficult night of my professional life, so it's not something I forget.
Okay. Were you present when Alberto Gonzalez visited Attorney General Ashcroft's bedside?
Yes.
And am I correct that the conduct of Mr. Gonzalez and Mr. Card on that evening troubled you greatly?
Yes.
Okay. Let me go back and take it from the top. You rushed to the hospital that evening. Why?
I'm only hesitating because I need to explain why.
Please. I give you all the time you need, sir.
I've actually thought quite a bit over the last 3 years about how I would answer that question if it was ever asked, because I assumed that at some point I would have to testify about it. The one thing I'm not going to do and be very, very careful about is, because this involved a classified program, I'm not going to get anywhere near classified information. I'm also am very leery of and will not reveal the content of advice I gave as a lawyer, deliberations I engaged in. I think it's very important for the Department of Justice that someone who held my position not do that.
Terms of privilege.
Yes, sir.
Understood.
Subject to that, I'm uncomfortable talking about this, but
I
will answer the question. To understand what happened that night, I kind of got to back up about a week.
Please.
In the early part of 2004, the Department of Justice was engaged, the Office of Legal Counsel under my supervision, in a reevaluation both factually and legally of a particular classified program. And it was a program that was renewed on a regular basis and required signature by the Attorney General certifying to its legality. And I remember the precise date, the program had to be renewed by March the 11th, which was a Thursday of 2004. And we were engaged in a very intensive reevaluation of the matter. And a week before that March 11th deadline, I had a private meeting with the Attorney General for an hour, just the two of us, and I laid out for him what we had learned and what our analysis was of this particular matter. And at the end of that hour-long private session, he and I agreed on a course of action. And within hours, he was stricken and taken very, very ill.
You thought something was wrong with how it was being operated or administered or overseen?
We had concerns as to our ability to certify its legality, and which was our obligation for the program to be renewed. The Attorney General was taken that very afternoon to George Washington Hospital, where he went into intensive care and remained there for over a week, and I became the acting Attorney General. And over the next week, particularly the following week on Tuesday, we communicated to the relevant parties at the White House and elsewhere our decision that, as acting Attorney General, I would not certify the program as to its legality, and explained our reasoning in detail, which I will not go into here, nor am I confirming it's any particular program. That was Tuesday that we communicated that. The next day was Wednesday, March the 10th, the night of the hospital incident, and I was headed home at about 8 o'clock that evening. My security detail was driving me, and I remember exactly where I was, on Constitution Avenue, and got a call from Attorney General Ashcroft's chief of staff telling me that he had gotten
What's
a call.
His name?
David Ayers. That he had gotten a call from Mrs. Ashcroft from the hospital. She had banned all visitors and all phone calls, so I hadn't seen him or talked to him because he was very ill. And Mrs. Ashcroft reported that a call had come through, and that as a result of that call, Mr. Card and Mr. Gonzalez were on their way to the hospital to see Mr. Ashcroft.
Do you have any idea who that call was from?
I have some recollection that the call was from the president himself, but I don't know that for sure. It came from the White House, and it came through, and the call was taken in the hospital.
Okay, I just want to do a little recapitulation here, make sure you understand what's going on, particularly if you've just joined. I am playing now the testimony before James Comey. He was the former Deputy Attorney General, former number two in the Justice Department under John Ashcroft, in the first term of the President of the United States. The person asking the questions is Chuck Schumer, Senator of New York. He said it was the most difficult day in his professional career. He said he assumed he would one day have to testify about this. Think about what that means. He assumed that he's going to have to testify about this most difficult day in his entire professional career. He said he met with Attorney General John Ashcroft. This is no liberal. This is, of course, a fundamentalist Christian, the guy who came in and, you know, draped over the open breasts of the statues because he didn't think they should be shown. A very conservative man who was willing to torture American citizens, torture other people. We don't know that American citizens were tortured, but to torture people, to hold people in jail without trial, to do all kinds of violations of the Constitution, which I don't have time to go into for this show. The point is John Ashcroft was willing to go absolutely to the limit, and I would argue beyond the Constitution of the United States. But he wasn't willing to go this far. He and James Comey agreed that the program the president wanted to do to spy on all Americans was against the law. He said he could not certify its legality. He couldn't certify it's legal. And they needed his certification to do it. The president can't do this unless they say it's legal. And they said, Mr. President, it's illegal. John Ashcroft needs emergency gallbladder surgery. He's in the hospital. James Comey is the acting Attorney General of the United States. He's in charge while Ashcroft is under the knife. And he and Ashcroft agree that they will not say this program is legal because it isn't. Because even though Ashcroft is willing to go to the limits of the Constitution, he's not willing to go beyond its limits. He's sick in bed. They both agree that this program is illegal. And Comey gets an emergency call. Not from the president. He gets a call from John Ashcroft's wife. His wife may have saved the country. Because Ashcroft's wife was there and had banned all visitors, and she got a call that James Comey believes, you just heard him say it, was from the President of the United States. President Bush was interrupting John Ashcroft's emergency surgery. He's convalescing. He's healing after gallbladder surgery. He's on probably on all kinds of medication. He's not even in charge. James Comey's in charge. And the president is sending someone up to his room regarding this program that Ashcroft and Comey had both agreed was illegal. What is the president trying to do? Comey got very nervous, and he went into emergency mode. Let's see what he did.
So I hung up the phone, immediately called my chief of staff, told him to get as many of my people as possible to the hospital immediately. I hung up, called Director Mueller, and with whom I'd been discussing this particular matter and who'd been a great help to me over that week, and told him what was happening. He said, I'll meet you at the hospital right now. Told my security detail that I need to get to George Washington Hospital immediately. They turned on the emergency equipment and drove very quickly to the hospital. I got out of the car and ran up the stairs with my security detail.
What was your concern? You were in obviously a huge hurry.
I was concerned that, given how ill I knew the Attorney General was, that there might be an effort to ask him to overrule me when he was in no condition to do that.
Right.
Okay. I was worried about him, frankly. And so I raced to the hospital room, entered, and Mrs. Ashcroft was standing by the hospital bed. Mr. Ashcroft was lying down in the bed. The room was darkened. And I immediately began speaking to him, trying to orient him as to time and place and try to see if he could focus on what was happening. And it wasn't clear to me that he could. He seemed pretty bad off.
And at that point, it was you, Mrs. Ashcroft, and the Attorney General and maybe medical personnel in the room, no other Justice Department or government officials.
Just the three of us at that point. I tried to see if I could help him get oriented. As I said, it wasn't clear that I had succeeded. I went out in the hallway, spoke to Director Mueller by phone. He was on his way. I handed the phone to the head of the security detail, and Director Mueller instructed the FBI agents present not to allow me to be removed from the room under any circumstances. And I went back in the room. I was shortly joined by the head of the Office of Legal Counsel, Assistant Attorney General Jack Goldsmith, and a senior staffer of mine who had worked on this matter, an Associate Deputy Attorney General. So the three of us, Justice Department people, went in the room. I sat down.
Can you just give us the names of the two other people?
It's Jack Goldsmith, who was the Assistant Attorney General, and Patrick Philbin, who was Associate Deputy Attorney General. I sat down in an armchair by the head of the Attorney General's bed. The two other Justice Department people stood behind me. And Mrs. Ashcroft stood by the bed holding her husband's arm, and we waited. And it was only a matter of minutes that the door opened and in walked Mr. Gonzalez carrying an envelope and Mr. Card. They came over and stood by the bed, greeted the Attorney General very briefly, and then Mr. Gonzalez began to discuss why they were there, to seek his approval for a matter, and explain what the matter was, which I will not do. And Attorney General Ashcroft then stunned me. He lifted his head off the pillow and in very strong terms expressed his view of the matter, rich in both substance and fact, which stunned me, drawn from the hour-long meeting we'd had a week earlier.
Let's stop the tape right here. I want you to get the drama of this moment. James Comey is concerned that the President of the United States is trying to trick a very sick Attorney General who is already a right-wing conservative, a fundamentalist Christian who generally agrees with the president that constitutional niceties aren't as important as fighting the war on terror. He's a man who's willing to take the Constitution to its limits, but finally told the president, sir, you have to follow the law. Okay? The Constitution of the United States says that under the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, you can't just go and randomly check people. It says very clearly, and I'm going to read it out to you, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, particularly describing the thing to be searched, the person to be seized. You can't randomly spy on every American. You need to have a warrant and probable cause. You need to follow the law. I'm willing to torture people. I'm willing to have secret prisons. I'm willing to hide people from the Red Cross. Ashcroft was willing to do all these things. But at rock bottom, he wasn't willing to create a Soviet-style East German system in the United States of America. And the president said, you know what? I heard you say that. And I heard your deputy say that. And I know that your deputy's in charge right now. But maybe while you're sick, maybe while you're under medication, I can trick you into signing an agreement to this program. James Comey was so concerned, he calls the director of the FBI. The director of the FBI is so concerned, the president's going to do this lawless act. that he says, don't let anyone let Comey leave the room under any circumstances. Do not let him leave the room. Do not let Gonzalez, our current attorney general, order him out of the room. They come in with an envelope. They try to get Ashcroft to sign the documents, and Ashcroft, who Comey's worried about, is under some drug-induced state because of his gallbladder surgery, to his credit, rises to the occasion, literally rises, takes his head off the pillow, and tells him under no uncertain terms, are you going to let the President of the United States break the law in this way? It's stunning testimony, and we're not done yet. Let me play some more.
And in very strong terms expressed himself, and then laid his head back down on the pillow, seemed spent, and said to them, but that doesn't matter because I'm not the Attorney General.
But he expressed his reluctance or he would not sign the statement that they give the authorization that they had asked. Is that right?
Yes. And as he laid back down, he said, but that doesn't matter because I'm not the Attorney General. There is the Attorney General. And he pointed to me when I was just to his left. The two men did not acknowledge me. They turned and walked from the room. And within just a few moments after that, Director Mueller arrived. I told him quickly what had happened. He had a brief, memorable, brief exchange with the Attorney General, and then we went outside in the hallway.
Okay. Now, just a few more points on that meeting. First, am I correct that it was Mr. Gonzalez who did just about all of the talking? Mr. Card said very little.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And they made it clear that that there was in this envelope an authorization that they hoped Mr. Ashcroft, Attorney General Ashcroft, would sign.
Yeah, in substance, I don't know exactly
yes.
the words, but it was clear that's what the envelope was.
And the Attorney General was, what was his condition? I mean, he had pancreatitis. He was very, very ill, in critical condition, in fact.
He was very ill. I don't know how the doctors graded his condition. This would have been his sixth day in intensive care. And as I said, I was shocked when I walked in the room and very concerned as I tried to get him to focus.
We have to take a break, but I just want to very quickly talk about what we've learned. They tried to get him to sign this document. They tried to get him to break the law. And who does most of the talking? Alberto Gonzalez. Card is just standing there. He's the chief of staff. Gonzalez is trying to trick the Attorney General into breaking the law. He doesn't acknowledge James Comey, who is the deputy acting Attorney General at the time. Doesn't acknowledge him at all, walks out of the room, and yet Gonzalez, this man who tried to convince the Attorney General to break the law, is now Attorney General of the United States, is now the Chief Law Enforcement Officer. More stunning testimony from James Comey right after this break.
I, George Walker Bush, do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States, and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Let's impeach the President for life.
My name is David Bell. I am a resident of Virginia's 11th Congressional District, and I ask Representative Tom Davis to initiate or support investigations into violations of the law by President Bush and his administration.
Tom Davis, my name is Jean Reynolds, and I'm one of your constituents. I want you to join immediately with other members of Congress to begin an investigation of the criminal acts that George Bush has committed.
I'm Nick Spengler of Ashland, Virginia, and I would like our troops to come home and Bush to get out of office.
My name is Nancy Maynard. I live in the 11th Congressional District, and this message is for Tom Davis. I'm asking you to please investigate for impeachment.
My name is Bruce Smith. I live in the 11th Congressional District in Woodbridge, Virginia. I want Congressman Davis to support the investigation of President Bush and Vice President Cheney and those that foisted this war on us.
Hello, Congressman Davis. I'm Carrie Plonson from the 11th Congressional District, and I'd like you to take immediate action to investigate George Bush and his offenses in leading this country into a war that's unwarranted and there is no solution for.
We have to impeach. I am just appalled that we would not, quote, waste our time with impeachment. The message to the world has to be that Bush and Cheney are guilty of international war crimes about which we can't do anything. We can do a lot about the crimes committed within the U.S. Constitution.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. The symbol of this show is the eyes under the Capitol Dome, all the news the government does not want you to know. It can be seen as looking in to see what goes on in Congress, but it can also be seen as looking out, because it is Congress's role to oversee the President of the United States. That's what our Constitution says. For 6 years, Congress has said, run by Republicans, we will not investigate the President. Whatever he does is right. It is our role to stay silent. The Democrats have a different view. They believe that the founders of the United States believed in checks and balances. And so they have called to testify former members of the Bush administration that probably wouldn't even have come to the fore if it weren't for this politicization of the prosecutor scandal, which I've talked about in other shows. And James Comey, the former Deputy Attorney General of the United States, formerly number two, has now testified to an amazing story. Frankly, I think if the American people had known this in March 2004, this president wouldn't continue to be president of the United States. I do wish he had told this story earlier. And yet, he understood that under oath, he was required to tell the story. No doubt he didn't want to tell this story, which doesn't make Alberto Gonzalez look very good, and doesn't make the president of the United States look very good. But he was forced to under oath. If he had lied, he would be guilty of perjury. This man stepped up to the occasion and recognized that the law is the law and the Constitution is the Constitution, and he was obligated to tell us the truth. You've heard the story at Ashcroft Hospital bed. Unfortunately, the story does not end there.
Okay, let's continue. What happened after Mr. Gonzalez and Card left? Did you have any contact with them in the next little while?
While I was talking to Director Mueller, an agent came up to us and said that I had an urgent call in the command center, which was right next door. They had Attorney General Ashcroft in the hallway by himself, and there was an empty room next door that was the command center. And he said it was Mr. Card wanting to speak to me. I took the call. Mr. Card was very upset and demanded that I come to the White House immediately. I responded that after the conduct I had just witnessed, I would not meet with him without a witness present. He replied, what conduct? We were just there to wish him well. And I said again, after what I just witnessed, I will not meet with you without a witness, and I intend that witness to be the Solicitor General of the United States.
That would be Mr. Olson.
Yes, sir. Ted Olson. Until right. I can connect with Mr. Olson, I'm not going to meet with you. He asked whether I was refusing to come to the White House. I said, no, sir, I'm not. I'll be there. I need to go back to the Department of Justice first. And then I reached out through the command center for Mr. Olson, who was at a dinner party. And Mr. Olson and the other leadership of the Department of Justice immediately went to the department where we sat down together in a conference room.
Let's just talk about that just really quickly. The incident happens. Andy Card, Chief of Staff to the President of the United States, is very upset, according to James Comey's testimony, demanded he immediately come to the White House. How dare you tell the President no? I don't care whether it's legal. I don't care whether it's constitutional. You don't tell the President no. As Richard Nixon once said, when the President does it, it's legal. Throw away the Constitution. Throw away the law. You are just following orders. Sigal, do what you're supposed to do. James Comey, to his credit, says, after what I saw, I want a witness. If the President of the United States is going to order me to break the law, I want a witness. John Ashcroft is sick in bed. I'm number two. I want number three, the Solicitor General of the United States, Ted Olson, to be by my side. Now, Ted Olson, as good a Bush flunky as there gets. Remember, this is the guy who did the legal argument in the Bush v. Gore decision, the most unlawful decision probably in the United States Supreme Court. The one where the Supreme Court said, I don't care what the American people vote for, Bush is president. That was Ted Olson who defended that decision. But he was number three, and James Comey knew that if the president was going to order him to break the law, he wanted to have a witness present. Andy Card says, are you refusing to come? Now you know what that means. You know what happens if your boss calls you and you say, I can't do that. Are you refusing to come? Obviously, Andy Card was going to use that as an excuse to fire James Comey, right? I mean, if your boss tells you, do this thing that's illegal, go steal from somebody, and you say, I can't do that, it's illegal, and they say, are you refusing a direct order? You know what's coming. He said, no, I'm not refusing. I just want a witness. If this is on the up and up, I don't want it to be your word against mine. I want a witness, and I'm going to bring in the third in charge of the department, Ted Olson. So now he goes to talk about the issue with Ted Olson.
Keep going.
And talked about what we were going to do. And about 11 o'clock that night, this evening it started at about 8 o'clock when I was on my way home. At 11 o'clock that night, Mr. Olson and I went to the White House together.
Just before you get there, you told Mr. Card that you were very troubled by the conduct from the White House room, and that's why you wanted Mr. Olson to accompany you, without giving any of the details, which we totally respect in terms of substance. Just tell me why. What did you tell him that so upset you, or if you didn't tell him, just tell us.
I was very upset. I was angry. I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man who did not have the powers of the Attorney General because they had been transferred to me. I thought he had conducted himself, and I said to the Attorney General in a way that demonstrated a strength I had never seen before, but still I thought it was improper. And it was for that reason I thought there ought to be somebody with me if I'm going to meet with Mr. Card.
This is very important, folks. He said he was very angry. He thought they were trying to take advantage of a very sick man. They thought they were trying to trick a man ill on drugs from gallbladder surgery into violating the law and Constitution of the United States of America. And if they were going to do that, he wanted a witness. Pretty strong stuff. I just think it's important that you understand who this man is. James Comey, conservative Republican, but someone who puts his country and the law before even the President of the United States. Let's go back to his testimony.
Can you tell us a little bit about the discussion at the Justice Department when all of you convened? I guess it was that night.
Yeah, I don't think it's appropriate for me to go into the substance of it. We discussed what to do. I recall the Associate Attorney General being there, the Solicitor General, the Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Office of Legal Counsel, senior staff from the Attorney General, senior staff of mine, and we just, I don't want to reveal the substance of those discussions.
I don't want you to reveal the substance. They all thought what you did, what you were doing was the right thing, I presume.
I presume. I didn't ask people, but I felt like we were a team. We all understood what was going on, and we were trying to do what was best for the country and the Department of Justice. But it was a very hard night.
Okay, and then did you meet with Mr. Card?
I did. I went with Mr. Olson driving. My security detail drove us to the White House. We went in to the West Wing. Mr. Card would not allow Mr. Olson to enter his office. He asked Mr. Olson to please sit outside in his sitting area. I relented and went in to meet with Mr. Card alone. We met, had a discussion, which was much more, much calmer than the discussion on the telephone. After, I don't remember how long, 10 or 15 minutes, Mr. Gonzalez arrived and brought Mr. Olson into the room, and the four of us had a discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And was Mr. Card, were you and Mr. Card still in a state of anger at one another at that meeting, or was it a little calmer and... Why?
Not that we showed. It was right. It was much more civil than our phone conversation. Much
Why?
Calmer.
Why do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I had calmed down a little bit. I'd had a chance to talk to the people I respected. Ted Olson I respect enormously.
Right. Okay. Was there any discussion of resignations with Mr. Card?
Mr. Card was concerned that he had heard reports that there were to be a large number of resignations at the Department of Justice.
Okay. Okay. And the conversations, the issue, whatever it was not resolved.
Correct. We communicated about it. I communicated again the Department of Justice's view on the matter, and that was it.
Right. And you stated that the next day, Thursday, was the deadline for reauthorization of the program. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can you tell us what happened the next day?
The program was reauthorized without us, without a signature from the Department of Justice attesting as to its legality. And I prepared a letter of resignation intending to resign the next day, Friday, March the 12th.
Okay, and that was the day, as I understand it, of the Madrid train bombings.
Thursday, March 11th was the morning of the Madrid train bombings.
And so, obviously, people were very concerned with all of that.
Yes, it was a very busy day in the counterterrorism aspect.
Yet, even in light of that, you still felt so strongly that you drafted a letter of resignation.
Yes.
Okay, and why did you decide to resign?
I just believe...
Or to offer your resignation, is a better way to put it.
I believe that I couldn't stay if the administration was going to engage in conduct that the Department of Justice had said had no legal basis.
That's very important. He couldn't stay if the administration was determined to break the law. He refused to be part of an administration that was determined to break the law. Now let's go back and say what he said. First of all, Andy Carr did not allow the witness into the office, Ted Olson. Very interesting. Some of that may be to serve a power play, who's in charge here. But even without the witness, James Comey said, I'm going to resign. I will not allow on my watch the President of the United States to spy on hundreds of millions of Americans when it is completely against the law. And he was not the only one to suggest that he would resign. There would be a slew of resignations.
Simply couldn't stay.
Right. Okay. Now, let me just ask you this, and this obviously is all troubling. As I understand it, you believe that others were also prepared to resign, not just you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Was one of those Director Mueller?
I believe so. You'd have to ask him, but I believe so.
You had conversations with him about it?
Yes.
Okay. How about the Associate Attorney General, Robert McCallum?
I don't know. We didn't discuss it.
How about your Chief of Staff?
Yes, he was certainly going to go when I went.
Right. How about Mr. Ashcroft's chief of staff?
My understanding was that he would go as well.
And
I should say,
please,
to make sure I'm accurate,
this is your surmise, not... Yeah.
Yeah. I ended up agreeing. Mr. Ashcroft's chief of staff asked me something that meant a great deal to him, and that is that I not resign until Mr. Ashcroft was well enough to resign with me.
Did you catch that? He wouldn't resign until Attorney General Ashcroft could resign with him. The Attorney General of the United States, the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, both their Chief of Staff, the Director of the FBI, all of them were going to resign. Why? Because without their authorization, the President of the United States went behind their back and reauthorized an illegal, unconstitutional program that everyone agreed had no basis in law. And who was the person who did that behind their back? Was it Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, perhaps? We'll have more testimony right after this.
Right.
you're concerned that we've become a nation whose policies are grounded in beliefs that are centered on a line embedded in BS, then don't miss Escape from Orwellian Nation, a talk show with regular citizens, not media spinmeisters. Uncle Sam wants you to watch right here on Channel 10.
In 2004, there were 203 million eligible voters in the United States. Of these, about 62 million voted for Bush, 59 million for Kerry, a little more than 1 million for other candidates, and nearly 81 million eligible voters didn't bother to vote at all, in essence voting for nobody. As it turned out, nobody won. Perhaps we'd be better off today had we the people paid closer attention to these results in 2004. History has demonstrated that violence only begets greater violence. And injustice only begets greater injustice. This is not the tradition of our great nation. This is not how we want the United States to be known around the world. We have another tradition that we think ought to prevail. One that is more just and more powerful. There is a better way. If we truly want peace and security, then we must work hard for justice.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am giving you today the completely unedited testimony of the former Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General of the United States, James Comey. He was acting Attorney General while Ashcroft was sick. I haven't edited a word I've given my commentary, but you are seeing it, and it's very hard to find, folks, and that's one of the reasons why I'm providing this information to you. I want to thank PoliticsTV.com. We've just talked about how the Justice Department and the administration behind the back of the Justice Department, even though number one, Attorney General John Ashcroft, number two, James Comey, even number three, Ted Olson, the guy that argued the Bush v. Gore decision, all agreed the Constitution of the United States prevented the president from spying on American citizens in the way he wanted to do. Everyone agreed. Frankly, this is worse than Richard Nixon. In Richard Nixon's time, you may recall, he ordered them not to prosecute Watergate. Number one and number two refused, but number three, Bob Bork, said he would fire the special prosecutor. So everyone is aligned. The top three members of the Justice Department, all their chiefs of staff, and the director of the FBI are all going to resign in a very public ceremony, March 2004, right before the election, saying, Mr. President, you must obey the law. We won't be a party to it. We won't allow you to go behind our back and to authorize a program that is blatantly illegal. Apparently the pressure worked, and the president backed down. Let's hear the end of the story.
He was very concerned that Mr. Ashcroft was not well enough to understand fully what was going on, and he begged me to wait until, this was Thursday that I was making this decision, to wait till Monday to give him the weekend to get oriented enough so that I wouldn't leave him behind, was his concern.
And it was his view that Mr. Ashcroft was likely to resign as well?
Yes.
So what did you do when you heard that?
I agreed to wait. I said that what I would do is that Friday would be my last day, and Monday morning I would resign.
Okay. Anything else of significance relevant to this line of questioning occur on Thursday the 11th that you can recall?
Not that I recall.
Thank you. Now, let's go to the next day, which was March 12th. Can you tell us what happened then?
I went to the Oval Office, as I did every morning as acting Attorney General, with Director Mueller to brief the President and the Vice President on what was going on Justice Department's counterterrorism work. We had the briefing, and as I was leaving, the President asked to speak to me, took me in his study, and we had a one-on-one meeting for about 15 minutes, which I will not go into the substance of. It was a very full exchange. And at the end of that meeting, at my urging, he met with Director Mueller, who was waiting for me downstairs. He met with Director Mueller again privately, just the two of them. And then after those two sessions, we had his direction to do the right thing, to do what
we... We
had the President's direction to do what we believe, what the Justice Department believed was necessary to put this matter on a footing where we could certify to its legality. And so we then set out to do that, and we did that.
Okay. That is the full 20 minutes of testimony. I'm very glad that you were here with me to watch that. That is a very important part of American history. Alberto Gonzalez had no concern for the law, and frankly, neither did the President, until every single law enforcement official in the country threatened to resign. Now, the President was asked, did he send Gonzalez down there? Did he try to break the law? And what does the President do? Well, he doesn't answer the question.
There's been some very dramatic testimony before the Senate this week from one of your former top Justice Department officials who describes a scene that some senators called stunning about a time when the wireless or when the warrantless wiretap program was being reviewed. Sir, did you send your then chief of staff and White House counsel to the bedside of John Ashcroft while he was ill to get him to approve that program? And do you believe that kind of conduct from White House officials is appropriate?
Kelly, there's a lot of speculation about what happened and what didn't happen. I'm not going to talk about it. It's a very sensitive program. I will tell you that, one, that the program is necessary to protect the American people, and it's still necessary because there's still an enemy that wants to do us harm. And so there'll be all kinds of talk about it. As I say, I'm not going to move the issue forward by talking about something as highly sensitive, highly classified subject. I will tell you, however, that the program is necessary.
Was it on your order, sir?
As I said, this program is a necessary program that was constantly reviewed and constantly briefed to the Congress.
Did you get that? I'm not going to talk about it. It's a highly sensitive, oops, classified thing. If it were classified, James Comey couldn't testify it before Congress, now could he? It's very sensitive when the President of the United States orders the Attorney General to break the law. I think that's sensitive. I'm not going to talk about it. Now, all he had to do when asked, did you send Alberto Gonzalez in there to trick a sick man into breaking the law and to spy on hundreds of millions of Americans, he could have said, no, that's not true. He didn't say that. He said, I'm not going to talk about it. And then he lied and said it was classified. You know it's not classified. James Comey made a very clear distinction. I'm not going to tell you how we're spying on hundreds of millions of Americans. That's classified. But the fact that they tried to trick a sick Attorney General Gonzalez into overruling him and doing the program, that's not classified. The President won't talk about it because it's sensitive. It's politically sensitive, and it damn well should be. Because when the President of the United States wants to violate the law, it should be a matter of concern. Tony Snow, the presidential spokesman, he practically laughs it off. He doesn't see it as a big deal at all. Let's listen to Tony Snow here on this question.
Okay, very dramatic testimony on Capitol Hill today. James Comey, who in 2000 was the acting attorney general, testified that when he raised objections to the terrorist surveillance program, that Alberto Gonzalez's White House counsel and the White House chief of staff, Andy Card, took this extraordinary measure. They went to the hospital room of John Ashcroft to try to get him to override what Jim Comey was saying about how this needs proper legal footing. So wasn't that an end run by the White House to try to get John Ashcroft to overrule James Comey?
Well, number one, you've got a representation of internal White House deliberations, and we simply don't talk about that and are not going to. Number two,
on Capitol Hill.
I understand that.
But you have to tell the truth to the American people. He's testified about it.
I understand
it.
Let me give you a couple of things. Also, what it always been noted is the terror surveillance program was, in fact, something that was constantly reviewed by the Department of Justice, either 45 or 90-day periods, and furthermore was reviewed by the inspectors general at the Department of Justice and at the National Security Agency. In addition, there was review by the FISA court.
It was reviewed by the Justice Department. It was reviewed by Congress. It was reviewed by the FISA court. He's absolutely right. They all agreed. It was illegal, unconstitutional, and most likely impeachable. offense. They all agreed it was a high crime to take this document and to shred it into pieces and to say we could spy on Americans as they did in East Germany. Keep a file on every one of us, find out what we're doing politically. That's what they do in the Soviet Union, not America. Yeah, they reviewed it. They told the president, we can't do this. And Alberto Gonzalez said, I don't give a damn about the Constitution. We're going to do it behind your back. No wonder George Bush and Tony Snow don't want to answer any questions about it. Tony Snow, in fact, let me play for you one last comment by him. Tony Snow, it's amazing to me, really, how he tries to avoid the question. Let's play a little bit more.
Chief law enforcement officer in the country is saying in 2004, I've got problems with this. And then you've got the chief of staff and the council, Alberto Gonzalez at the time, going. And according to James Comey, they were trying to take advantage of a sick man who was in intensive care.
Trying to take advantage of a sick man because, yeah. Because he had an appendectomy, his brain didn't work.
He was in intensive care at GW.
Yeah.
I thought I had just witnessed an effort to take advantage of a very sick man.
Yeah.
Okay? But did any White House officials come and try to take advantage of...
Again,
that's really not applicable in terms of this.
No, but they
were trying to take advantage of him, according to James Comey.
Ed, I'm just telling you, I don't know anything about the conversations. I've also told you the relevant thing, which is you want to ask from a substantive point of view, were there protections in terms of the terror surveillance program? The answer is yes. It had multiple layers of review, both with the Department of Justice and the National Security Agency. Jim Comey could talk about whatever reservations he may have had. But the fact is that there were strong protections in there. This is a program that saved lives, that is vital for national security, and furthermore has been reformed in a bipartisan way that is in keeping with everybody.
You are the snowman! There's a reason why they call you Snow. There's a reason why they hide you from the Fox Propaganda Channel. Did you see that little smirk? Appendectomy? How sick could he have been? Oh, come on. His brain wasn't working? So he was on mind-altering drugs, and the president tried to convince him to break the Constitution to spy on 100 millions of Americans. This happens every day. It happens in Mexico. Saddam Hussein did this kind of thing. East Germany, it happened all the time. Our president is no more unlawful than, say, Stalin. This is a joke. This is a joke. This is no joke. I don't know how many lives have been saved. He never cites a single life that's been saved. But I do know this. When you shred the Constitution of the United States, you destroy all that America is about. We are a country where the rule of law controls and should continue to control. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow when I debate Republican Mike Lane on these issues.